And we are on air on Fan for Racing Radio. This is Thursday night, August the 4th, and tonight we will be doing our Michigan NASCAR weekend preview with Hot Topic Sound Off at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, in our first half hour, we will start with some short track news and upcoming races. We'll also preview the ARCA Menards Series at Michigan International Speedway, along with some updates from the ARCA East and West Series. At 9 o'clock, we do have some press conference audio from Austin Hill. He's the driver of the number 33 for Richard Childress Racing Chevrolet this weekend at Michigan in the NASCAR Cup Series. Afterward, we will offer some updates from the NASCAR Truck Series. They are not racing this weekend. and then at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we will get into the NASCAR Xfinity and the Cup Series preview at Michigan. And as we mentioned earlier, 10 o'clock is our Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fan for Racing crew. And I think our Fan for Racing crew is just going to be a couple of us tonight, including our co-host, Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. It's Thursday night, so that means we're talking about the upcoming weekend. And I heard you say in Michigan a lot. It's a big track, so you got to say it a lot because it's that big.
It is that big.
Weekend up there in the Midwest, Michigan fans. I know don't get to see the NASCAR series as often as they'd like, so they make it a big one.
Yes, indeed. We're going to start off, though, with some short track news. I'm going to briefly just kind of lead you to where you can hear a lot about some of the racing that took place this past weekend. But also, Jay and I are going to spend some time on the USAC Silver Crown Series that's racing this weekend as well. But there was some big racing taking place at North Wilkesboro Speedway. And if you go to Racing America, they have several articles that will talk about what's happening there. And also, Richie Evans, a lot of people know that name from Modified Competition, has 38 wins. Matt Hirschman is closing the gap there. He's now at 34 wins. So that's going to be fun to watch for people. Anything else that you want to point out about the racing this weekend?
Well, this past weekend, it was great to see. We saw Ryan Newman. You're talking about North Wilkesboro. Ryan Newman returned to victory lane. How fitting is it to have a veteran driver like Ryan Newman be a part of and win that revitalization at North Wilkesboro? You know, I know Dale Earnhardt Jr. is going to be a part of some of the races with his late model. That would be another one. But it was great to see Ryan Newman. We've seen him win with the SRX, and I believe the next night he didn't return to North Wilkesboro because he was off running a midget race. So great to see Ryan Newman out there actively racing and winning.
Exactly right. Polly Hartwig III made some history at North Wilkesboro. He's an 11-year-old driver who swept the Carolina Crate Modified Series races at North Wilkesboro. So he made some history as the youngest driver ever to win at that track. So that's kind of cool to see as well. And if you head over to Flow Racing, they have a lot of articles up about the BC39. You mentioned Ryan Newman. He was a big part of that. So really cool to see all the articles up about the BC39 this past weekend, coming up this weekend.
Yeah, that is one. I know he's put a lot of time into that effort. Driver, we obviously missed one of those unfortunate situations, but to see him still honored like that, and there's several drivers throughout the Cup Series all the way down through these short tracks that honor Brian Clausen.
Yes, indeed. But the one that we're going to really spend a lot of time on is there are 24 drivers that are entered in the USAC Silver Crown races and teams that will all file in to Ohio's Toledo Speedway this Saturday night, August 6th, for the Hemelgarn Racing Super Fitness Rolly Beal Classic fueled by Marco's Pizza as the champ cars pound the pavement in the Glass City. So a lot going on there. Are you still with me, Jay?
Yep, sorry about that. I was on mute. I was asking myself if I was on mute, but yeah, the field's going to include a pair of past Raleigh Beal Classic winners and two of the best pavement racers in the entire country. This is a 100-lap feature on the half-mile paved oval. The last time the Champ Cars competed at Toledo was back in October of 2021, as Cody Swanson enters the event as the defending race winner and has won each of the last three among his total of five USAC Silver Crown race victories there at Toledo. He's also the Silver Crown Series most recent winner, and that came at Winchester Speedway in Indiana back in mid-July.
Also, Bobby Santos from Franklin, Massachusetts is among the contenders looking for a victory. And after he previously scored the Rolly Beals Classic win at Toledo in 2017, he's already been in Silver Crown's victory lane in May of this year at the Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. So he wants to come back again. Also, series points leader C.J. Leary from Greenfield, Indiana is a front runner on the pavement. The highly decorated dirt racer and past USAC AmSoil Sprint Car National Champion won in his last time on the asphalt with the series in June at Wisconsin's Madison International Speedway. He's making his first Toledo appearance since 2019.
Now, California driver, I know they don't like to make comparisons, but coming from Sutter, California, Logan Seavey is aiming to make gains towards a Silver Crown Championship run with a solid Toledo finish. He's already been to victory lane on the dirt at Port Royal, Pennsylvania Speedway. And Seavey is a past USAC NOS Energy Drink Midget National Champion from the 2018 season and at Toledo. I know he gets compared a lot of times to Jeff Gordon, so we'll see if we don't see that name more. We've seen it before, even up at the top three level. So.
Yep.
Now, a mere 3 points separate the top three in this USAC Silver Crown Championship fight, with Swanson leading the way over Seavey and then Leary, who are each tied 3 points apiece behind Swanson. And both Seavey and Leary are pursuing the first Silver Crown driving title.
Now, the past champion, Justin Grant from Ione, California, is looking to earn his first victory at Toledo on Saturday. The 2020 Silver Crown Titleist car is owned by Toledo area native and 1996 Indianapolis 500 winning car owner Ron Hemmelgren. Also, local racer Austin Niemeyer from Sylvania, Ohio, is making the short trek to Toledo Speedway, where his four Toledo Silver Crown starts have resulted in top eight finishes. I'm sure he's looking to make that happen again this weekend.
We also got Brian Tyler out of Parma, Michigan, among champions in the lineup making a run at Toledo. He's the 1996 and 97 USAC National Sprint Car Champion. Was third-place finisher in his most recent Toledo outing in 2021. And then you have National Sprint Car Hall of Famer Eric Gordon out of Greenfield, Indiana. He's a veteran racer with past Toledo success as a USAC Sprint Car feature winner.
Then there's Taylor Ferns from Shelby Township, Michigan. She is looking to beat her history-making record in the USAC Silver Crown competition when she finished third last May at IRP and stands as the best finish by a woman in Silver Crown history. Also, Hemmelgren Racing Super Fitness Rolly Beal Classic fueled by Marco's Pizza will feature the USAC Silver Crown National Championship, plus the ARCA Salembian Excavating Late Model Sportsman and a 100-lap The Vault ARCA Factory Stock feature to cap off the night of action. Vintage race cars will also be on display.
That's one of those. If I were in that area, I would certainly try to make a showing, because you get a big bang for your buck with all that racing.
Absolutely.
We got the USAC Silver Crown. The practice is going to run from 4:30 to 5:15 p.m. I'm guessing these are in Eastern time. It doesn't tell me that, but
yeah,
qualifying
you're probably
is
right.
At 5:45. All right, we'll go with that. Parade laps for the vintage cars, slated for 6:30, 5 p.m. And then the USAC Silver Crown cars and drivers be on the front stretch at 6:50 p.m. Getting closer to showtime, there's going to be a Beale family introduction, the brief racer reunion, the national anthem starting at 6:50, followed by driver introductions, and then the Raleigh Beale Classic main event to start at 7 p.m. And as I said, that's one of those, when you get a package deal like that on a race day, a race weekend, that's tough to pass up.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's this Saturday, August the 6th, out at Toledo Speedway. So if you're anywhere near there or you want to make the trip, this is the weekend to do it. Now, Jay, we're actually just a couple minutes ahead of time. Was there any other racing action this weekend that you wanted to make sure we featured?
I think we covered it all. Again, you can check out both Racing America, as well as you can always find something on Flow Racing. Noon or night, midnight, it don't matter. It doesn't matter what style of racing you like to watch. I know a friend of mine was getting ready to watch some midget action later on tonight. That's what he was doing tonight. So check out one of those two if you're not subscribers to either one. Well worth the money, because, again, you can get live streaming of current happening events or on demand of past events.
Absolutely. There's also a lot of NASCAR Weekly Touring Series that are racing this weekend. We mentioned the BC39 USAC Midgets. They're racing at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and that actually started, I think, Wednesday and will continue through the weekend. So there's just so much racing, like Jay said. If you want to watch racing at any time of the day, just go over to Flow Racing or Racing America, and you're going to find a race that you're going to be interested in seeing what's happening. And I'm so impressed. As long as we're talking about this, and how many of the NASCAR drivers are going to these local tracks and racing in so many of these events and doing well.
You're right. I know, and just scrolling through there, we got Bobby Labonte and the Modifieds that are going to be back at North Wilkesboro. We talked about Ryan Newman. There's a couple that's what they do. Kyle Larson, obviously, being one, Christopher Bell. But we've seen more and more of it, as you mentioned. I know Jeff Gordon kind of called out the Hendrick Motorsports drivers. We've seen William Byron, Chase Elliott making a couple different starts in different races. And I know that's kind of been a mentality change, especially for HMS. And I think back to, I think if I'm not mistaken, Tony Stewart, that was kind of a situation with him and Joe Gibbs, that Tony wanted to do more racing of his own at his own discretion. Became a team owner, he can do what he wants. So there's a lot of drivers that really do love that.
Well, and I think they find out it makes them better drivers as well. Now, we're going to be doing our preview of the ARCA Menards Series at Michigan International Speedway next. If you want to watch that race on Flow Racing, it is available at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And, again, that's at Michigan International Raceway this weekend. But it's also going to be available. Let me see here. I think it's also available on FS1, if I remember correctly. August 6th. No, it's on MAV TV this weekend. So MAV TV is also available at Flow Racing. So you'll be able to watch that race. And that's 5:30 p.m. Central Time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. But I'm sure Flow is starting their pre-race coverage early.
I'm sure they do a lot of coverage with that of pre-post and during the race as well. They do a great job of covering these events. They give you some pre-race notes from what will be the Henry Ford Health 200 for the ARCA Menards Series at Michigan International Speedway. It's the 12th race of the 2022 ARCA Menards Series season and the 41st race for the series at MIS. Rajah Karuth enters the Henry Ford Health 200 with a whopping 2-point advantage over his Rev Racing teammate Nick Sanchez in the Arca Menards Series Championship standings. Third place goes to Daniel Dye, who actually, they tightened this up. He's now just 4 points out of the lead in third place.
Yeah, Sanchez is the only one of the three championship contenders with previous experience at Michigan International Speedway, where he finished third in 2021. Now, Carruth and Dye will both be making their first series start at MIS, so Sanchez has a bit of an edge there. He also has 2 wins on the scoreboard this year, with victories at Talladega Super Speedway in April and Kansas Speedway in May. Neither Carruth or Dye have found victory lane yet in 2022. So, again, I think that gives a little bit of an advantage to Nick Sanchez.
Yeah, if you were looking at that, those three, I would have to agree that would kind of be the favorite to pick. But you also got to look at some other drivers. We got the defending Arca Menards Series East champion, Sammy Smith. Now, it will be his first start at Michigan International Speedway. But Smith, who started the season at 17 years of age but has since turned 18, has 2 short track wins at Elko Speedway and Berlin Raceway and is now eligible to compete on all tracks. And then we have a 2-time NASCAR Camping World Truck Series winner, Corey Heim, returning to the Arca Menards Series, taking back the reins of the number 20 Toyota for Venturini Motorsports. Heim shares that ride with 2-time defending Arca Menards Series West champion Jesse Love, who, like Sammy Smith, started the season at age 17 and wasn't eligible to compete on a lot of the intermediate and super speedways. So Heim's first Arca Menards Series win came at an intermediate track, Kansas Speedway, back in October of 2020. So there's 2 more you got to throw into that fold.
Okay, and I've got some more. Red Holmes, the 2020 Arca Menards Series champion, returns to the series, looking to avenge his runner-up finish in 2020. Holmes led a career-high 61 laps but lost the lead to the eventual winner, Riley Earps, with just 34 laps to go. Also, Grass Lake, Michigan driver Morgan Bayard will make his first series start since finishing 7th in Michigan in 2021. Baird will once again drive the number 11 Toyota for 1995 ARCA Series champion Andy Hillenberg.
Well, we got another Michigan native in Brownstown Township. Jeffrey McZink is also returning to the ARCA Menards Series for the first time since he finished 9th at Michigan in 2021. McZink is driving a family-owned team, started racing his racing career at one of the ARCA's 2 weekly short tracks, which is Flat Rock Speedway, which is about 45 minutes east of Michigan International Speedway.
Okay.
And then,
go ahead. I'm sorry. I got ahead of myself.
All right. I know you were going to say he's a regular guest here on Fan for Racing Radio. Greg Van Alst, he'll be making his stop on Friday night before reaching Michigan International Speedway. He'll visit the Adrian, Michigan headquarters of Creek Enterprise, which is an official technology partner of the Arca Menards Series. Van Alst finished 6th at Michigan in 2021, and he'll be looking for his first top 5 finish since a 5th-place finish at Charlotte Motor Speedway back in May.
Okay, now former Arca Menards Series General Tire pole winners at Michigan include Ben Hess, Bobby Schott, Jimmy Horton, Bobby Bauscher, Mark Thompson, Gary Layton, Bobby Gerhart, David Keith, Shauna Robinson, Jason Jarrett, Blaze Alexander, Chad Blount, Casey Mears, Justin Hobgood, Kyle Krisiloff, Chuck Weber, Brent Sherman, Sam Hornish Jr., Scott Speed, Craig Goess, Gale, Joey Coulter, Ryan Blaney, Mason Mitchell, Brandon Jones, and Michael Self. Self actually holds the ARCA track record at 37.296 seconds and 193.050 miles per hour. Also, former Arca Menards Series winners at Michigan include Joe Ruttman, Billy Harvey, Tracy Leslie, Dave Mader III, Stanley Smith, Bob Keselowski, Jeff Purvis, Ron Bartfield Jr., Tim Steele, Mark Thompson, Frank Kimmel, he has a lot of wins, David Keith, Carrie Earnhardt, Blaze Alexander, Chad Blount, Casey Mears, Reed Sorensen, Stephen Wallace, David Strem, Brent Sherman, Eric Darnell, Justin Lofton, Parker Kligerman, Mikey Kyle, Taya Dillon, Chris Buescher, Brennan Poole, Austin Terrio, Ross Kenseth, Brandon Jones, Sheldon Creed, Michael Self, Riley Herbst, and Ty Gibbs. That's a long list, and a lot of those names are very familiar to NASCAR as well. So it just shows you how deep the roots are for the Arca Menards series.
It is indeed. And then up in the booth, we got a treat. We got Daytona 500 champion Austin Cindric, as he's going to join Chris DeKelly and Jim Tréteau in the MAV TV booth for the Henry Ford Health 200. And that race is set for August 6th. Practice will be at 10:45 through 11:20 a.m. That will be Eastern time, followed by a 20-minute time session for the general tire pole qualifying at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. And then the race, which follows the Xfinity Series race, is set for 6:30 p.m. Eastern time start time. The Henry Ford Health 200 will be televised live on MAV TV and as well broadcast on the affiliates of MRN Radio and the network, MRN Radio Network nationwide.
Okay, so that's going to be quite a race. You have any favorites going in, Jay?
Yeah, like I said, as we went down the list, I kept finding more and more favorites. Corey Heim, I think it would have to be one. You know, he's in a Venturini Motorsports machine, so I kind of lean towards him, but I don't think it's going to be a runaway victory like we've seen in the past from certain drivers. I think there's a lot of good competition there this weekend.
There really is. And we mentioned a lot of the drivers that are going to be in that event, but there is an entry list here. I was trying to do a quick count, but I don't think I've got the number yet. Let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 21 drivers entered this weekend. So we can go from the bottom up if you want. So, Jay?
All right. I'm just glad to see we can count the same, because that was what I had come up with, but the way the chart is, it's sometimes tough to tell. So
yeah,
I'll start with Zachary Tinkle in the 06 for Wayne Peterson, with Nate Moeller as his crew chief. And then the Ford 03 of Alex Club in a self-owned and crew chief by Brian Club. He'll be in the number 03 Ford of Clubs Racing Incorporated and Josh's Eggs.
Okay, coming out of North Aurora, Illinois, is Dallas Fruway. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. He'll be driving the number 1 Universal Technical Institute Chevrolet for Hillenburg. And Dallas is also going to be standing in as his own crew chief as well, it looks like. Also, Jason Kitzmiller from Maysville, West Virginia, will be behind the wheel of the 97 ALL Construction Chevrolet for Cody Rohrbaugh, with Todd Myers on top of the pit box.
Name we haven't heard in a while. You can check out an article on the Arca Menards homepage. The 72 in the Jegs Cody Coughlin Company will be Cody Coughlin. Comes out of Delaware, Ohio. He'll be driving a Ford owned by John Coughlin, crew chief by Kevin Hamlin. And then we got the Kimmel name, the 69 owned and crew chief by Bill Kimmel. The driven, looks like he's back now, Scott Melton in the number 69 coming out of Rockford, Michigan in that Toyota.
Okay, driving the number 65 is Jeffrey McSink from Brownstown, Michigan. He'll be driving that Toyota for Jared McSink, who is also the crew chief. It's the Syncon Performance Flooring Parkway Services Toyota. Also in the familiar number 48 is Brad Smith from Shelby Township, Michigan. He'll be driving the Coprea Chevrolet for his own race team with Jeff Smith on top of the pit box.
Coming out of Dillon, Florida, is one of your championship contenders right now, the 43 GMS Chevrolet, driven by Daniel Dye. Owners listed as Murray Gallagher, and then Chad Bryant as his crew chief. And then the Greg Van Alst-owned and driven machine, it'll be Jim Long as the crew chief for that number 35 Ford, with CV Fabricating Top Choice Fence sponsored on the car, and Greg comes out of Anderson, Indiana.
From Winnipeg, Manitoba, is Amber Balkin in the number 30 Icon Ford for Mark Rett. Mark Rett will also be her crew chief for the week. Then Kevin Reed Jr. is the crew chief in the Venturini-owned number 25, driven by Tony Breidinger out of Hillsboro, California. Her sponsor is Hair Club, and that will be displayed proudly on her Toyota this weekend.
And I always like to see the Holmes machine. Stacy Holmes owned, Brett Holmes driven, Golden Eagle Syrup number 23 Chevrolet. Shane Huffman is the crew chief. Brett coming out of Mumford, Alabama. And then sticking from down south out of Marietta, Georgia, comes that number 20 Bill Venturini owned Toyota. Corey Heim will be behind the wheel, and Shannon Rursch in his ear.
Okay, and it'll be Mark McFarlane on top of the pit box for the KBM number 18 Toyota, and Sammy Smith will be behind the wheel. He hails from Johnston, Iowa. Then it's Gus Dean behind the wheel of the number 15 Venturini Dean Custom Air Toyota with Kevin Reed on top of the pit box. Dustin Hales from Bluffton, South Carolina.
In the number 12, we have D.L. Wilson coming out of Mart, Texas. That's a Hillenburg Chevrolet. Wilson Traditional Metals Fast Track Sponsorship. Dick Doheny is the crew chief. And on the Toyota for Hillenburg, there we got Mike Schrauf as the crew chief. Morgan Baird going to be the driver. We talked about him coming out of Grass Lake, Michigan. And he'll have long drink experience Jackson on the car.
All right. And the number 10 is Tim Monroe from Elmwood, Illinois. He'll be racing the Fast Track Racing Ford for Andy Hillenburg. And Tim Monroe is also the crew chief. Brad Means will be the crew chief for Raja Karuth, the points leader. He'll be behind the wheel of the number 6 for Max Siegel's Chevrolet, and he hails from Washington, D.C.
Well, I said he was a favorite, but that's not why he's last on the list. Numerically, top bottom to top, and the number 2 car is Nick Sanchez out of Miami, Florida. Mentioned he's in a Rev Racing Chevrolet as well, owned by Max Siegel. Matt Buescher is his crew chief, and he's literally in the middle of that championship battle.
All right. Real quick, I just want to mention that the next Suit Chief Showdown event will take place on August the 19th out at Watkins Glen International Road Course, and that's the General Tire Delivers 100. That'll be on FS1. Then on the next day, August the 20th, is the ARCA West race at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, 9:30 Eastern, out at Evergreen Speedway, and that will Napa Auto Parts ARCA West 150 will be live streamed on Flow Racing. And then for the ARCA East, they'll be racing the Sprechter 180 on August the 28th, 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern, out at the Milwaukee Mile, and that will be televised on MAV TV as well. And with that merger, it'll also be available on Flow Racing. So mark your calendars for these upcoming events that are taking place in the ARCA series. All right, we are coming up to the top of the hour here. We're at that top of the hour. And it's time now for us to take a look at our audio for this week. It was announced earlier this week, Jay, that Austin Hill would be behind the wheel of the number 33 for Richard Childress Racing's Chevrolet this weekend out at Michigan International Speedway in the NASCAR Cup Series. So I do have some audio here. It is The length is 16 minutes, 17 seconds. We'll listen to about 7 or 8 minutes of that and then have our comments afterward. So let's go ahead and get started. Again, Austin Hill, normally he drives the 21 Chevrolet in the Xfinity Series for Richard Childress Racing, but look for him to be behind the wheel of that number 33 this weekend.
Gotcha.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Congratulations on the news. That was made official here just about 30 minutes ago. So before we go to questions, tell us a little bit about just kind of the news that came out and then just your excitement leading into the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited to go race in the Cup Series. Finally get my first Cup start. Better late than never, right? I'm 28 years old, so getting a little bit later jump on this, but very excited for RCR giving me the opportunity, Bennett, United Rentals, you know, all of our partners that make this happen. So really excited about it. Can't wait to get out there and just do what we can do. Our first goal is to just make all the laps and learn each and every lap throughout the race and try to take that going forward.
All right. We will now get to questions for Austin. If you have one, raise your hand. We'll get to as many as we can in the time that we have. And to kick us off, we're going to go to Bob Popper. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Austin, was there something about Michigan that made it the right place for you to make your debut, whether for you or for the organization?
Yeah, it just kind of worked out that way. You know, we obviously went and spoke to all of our partners and tried to figure out which race was going to be the best one to do. And we felt like Michigan was a good place for me to go run. It sort of fits my driving style, I feel like. And I've had success there in the past in the Truck Series. And, you know, hopefully I can kind of turn that around in the Cup side. And you know, you want to make the most out of your first start. So we just figured Michigan would be a good one for us.
And do you get any sense of if you're going to be evaluated for future Cup rides, whether you think you'll be evaluated on, like, your performance more this weekend in the Cup car versus what you're doing in the Xfinity Series?
I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be an evaluation done to see how I do against all the Cup regulars and, you know, where we stack up and things like that and how much we learn throughout the race. But, I mean, that's the biggest thing for me is just learning throughout the race weekend and figuring out things that the guys on the Cup side are doing, you know, maybe differently than what we do on the Xfinity side that I can maybe take forward on the Xfinity side. So I honestly just think it's a good opportunity for me. I think it's something that I've wanted to do for a very long time, and it finally all came together, and RCR has been a big, big reason for that.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question is going to go to Cameron Richardson. Go ahead, Cameron.
Hey, Austin, what's the most important thing that you want to learn in your Cup debut?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I think there's a lot of things that I can learn throughout the race. You know, first and foremost, I'd say just how aggressive all the drivers are on the racetrack. You know, the moves that they make and how they create passes and create runs and things like that. I think there's going to be a different view of what I've seen on the Truck side and the city side, just how the Cup regulars approach, you know, making passes and creating momentum and creating speed, things like that. So, you know, I'm excited to be able to get out on the racetrack with guys like Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, you know, Chase Elliott, you know, all those guys, and just hopefully learn from them, see things that they're doing on the racetrack. I think that's going to be a real good opportunity for me to see what SMT shows. And, you know, you can see your throttle trace, brake trace, steering trace, all those different variables that you can see that you have at your disposal on the Cup side. So I think that's going to help me out a lot going forward in my career, being able to see all that data and be able to try to go out and put it forward.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Our next question will go to Claire B. Lane. Go ahead, Claire.
Thank you. Austin, you were talking about you're sure you'll be evaluated as you, you know, take on this debut. But is that, has that been spoken to you, or is it just understood? Like, have you guys talked about anything, or we're going to be watching you, or do you feel like you just understand that?
It's just something that I feel like any time that someone gets the opportunity to run in the Cup Series, I feel like no matter who it is, I think that they're going to be evaluated. They're going to be viewed, you know, not just for the organization you're racing for, I think just for the whole garage, and they want to see what you can do on the Cup side. So I think that that's just an understanding that all of us drivers have, is that you're going to be evaluated, you're going to be looked at, see what you can do against the Cup regulars, and, you know, try to minimize mistakes the best you can. And like I said before, just finish all the laps and see where you end up. And if that's 15th grade, if that's 30th, you know, grade two, we just need to go out there and run all the laps and learn as much as we can. That way, if I do get the opportunity to go again, I can just take all that information in and retain all of it and put it forward going to the next one and get that opportunity to present itself.
Might be an unfair question to ask you, but how ready do you think you are for this, right? And obviously, you wouldn't say yes, or maybe some people would if they didn't think they were ready. You've done a lot of great racing. You know, how ready do you think you are, and how much do you even know when you're a young driver, when you get the opportunity, whether you're ready or not until you do it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of us drivers have confidence in yourself. You always have confidence in yourself to feel like with your ability that you can go out there and compete and run up front, things like that. So I have a lot of confidence in myself, but until I get out there and see where I stack up with all these Cup regulars, I don't, you know, really know where I stack up yet. But just getting the opportunity is a blessing in itself. And I think, you know, I've been racing since I was 6 years old, and I'm 28 years old now. I feel like it's time. I don't feel like it's something where I'm a 18-year-old jumping into a Cup car and you know, you're a young kid. I feel like I'm definitely more mature than most on that aspect of it. So hopefully the maturity level that I have can kind of take that forward onto the Cup side.
All right. Some interesting comments there. And I want to get your thoughts about his comments, Jay.
Well, there were a couple of things there I did not realize. I know he wasn't one of the young up-and-comers, if you will, 16, 17, 18 years old we've been talking about. I didn't realize he was on the closer edge to 30. I mentioned 28. Mm-hmm. So this really is, I don't want to say his last or, you know, the edge of the opportunity, but he knows it. He said it. Himself. So I really thought I was impressed with he stayed focused on this is an opportunity, this race at Michigan for me.
Mm-hmm.
Run with the Cup drivers. We talk about when the Cup drivers come down to the Xfinity Series, he's going to get it a little differently being on the Cup side. But the things he said he could transfer and just seeing how these drivers do make passes, set up passes, run different lines, and everything he can absorb. If he gets another Cup experience, obviously then use it for that, but also what he can take to the Xfinity side. So, you know, I know when they asked about if it was directly spoken, anytime you're out on the track, somebody's watching and evaluating you. So he knows that as well. You know, it is that opportunity, whether it's been verbally stated, hey, this is your chance, show us what you can do, or not. Whether it be from Richard Childress Racing, he knows others are watching as well. As I said, they are at all times.
And I really liked that he took his age as a positive, that he brings maturity to that role coming into the series, especially when you consider some of the younger people that have come into the Cup Series that don't yet have the maturity level. And he's indicating that he can bring a different mental state into the Cup Series than somebody who is younger, who hasn't gone through that maturity process. So I think that is an advantage, and I'm happy that he's going to be in that number 33 for Richard Childress this weekend.
And certainly, and I know we talked about this with the hot topic of if this is down the road, the locked-in driver that Richard Childress may go with for to replace Tyler Reddick, whether this is an evaluation and we see other drivers get starts. But like I said, I don't feel like he's letting that get in his head. He's aware of it, but he said, hey, this is just an opportunity for me to grow even more as a driver, period, point blank. What happens from there, I'm going to make the best of, you know, take what I can at this point. So I think that's really good, and that goes with what you said, repeating his, of the maturity level. Don't get too far. You know, we see some younger drivers maybe trying too hard or making mistakes because they're trying to prove something because they're trying to go all the way to the Cup level versus just naturally doing what you can do and it will happen and letting it happen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Exactly right. again, he had a press conference with some of the media, and that's the audio that we listened to here. And that's when they made the announcement that Austin Hill would be in that car. Right now, that's the only race he has scheduled to be in the Cup Series for this season. So I think that does lead into what we had kind of talked about on our Hot Topics conversation, that, you know, there might be other drivers that will be in that number 33 in the Cup Series throughout the remainder of the season, and perhaps even into the playoffs. So, and to all of the conversation about the, you know, evaluation and everything, it wasn't spoken about necessarily, but you're right. Anytime you're in a Cup car, especially for the first time, or anytime you're racing for that matter, you are being evaluated on what you're doing as a driver and your maturity level to move forward or to handle difficult situations and so on and so forth. So I do think that this is a really positive move for Austin Hill. I think he'll do well, and I'm looking forward to watching him race.
It would have been curious, had I been able to do a follow-up question there with some of the ones that got asked, of when this plan of him racing here at Michigan International Speedway in the 33 kind of came about. If it was after the Tyler Reddick announcement, kind of leads you in one direction. If that was already planned, that tells you Richard Childress had some thoughts already about Austin Hill. So it would have been kind of curious to ask that of when this went into play. Might lead you to lean at least one way or another what the long-term plan is.
Exactly. So, yeah, that would have been a good follow-up question in that situation. And it may have been in that media interview somebody might have asked that question. And I'm almost wishing I would have let it run just a little bit longer just to find out if that was asked. But it is. We're going to go ahead and move on now to our news and notes for this week for the different series that are racing and not racing this weekend. This weekend, it's just the Xfinity and Cup Series that's racing. The next race for the Camping World Truck Series will be at Richmond Raceway in the Worldwide Express 250 for Carrier Appreciation. That'll be Saturday, August the 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And we'll get into more of that preview next week when we do our preview show. But we do have some news and notes here with regard to the Truck Series, just to keep everybody in the loop. So do you want to start with the Sunoco rookie update? I just made up a new word.
All right. All right. For the Sunoco Rookie of the Year update, or whatever Sharon referred to it as, you got Kyle Busch Motorsports driver Corey Heim. Let's not combine all those. KBM Motorsports Corey Heim posted a fifth-place finish this past weekend at Indianapolis, and in the process opened up his NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Sunoco Rookie of the Year point lead over second place Lawless Allen by 62 points. Heim, for the most of the season, has been running a part-time schedule, but he has announced that he will be in the 51 truck now for the rest of the season in pursuit of that Rookie of the Year honors, as well as the Owner's Championship.
Yeah, a lot of that had to do with his birthday when he turned 18 years of age. They gave him a chance to run all those races now. Also, there's an owner playoff update in the Camping World Truck Series. None of the current trucks in the series owners playoffs won last weekend in Indianapolis. Therefore, Front Row Motorsports number 38-4 leads the postseason standings by 14 points over Thor Sport Racing's number 99 Toyota, and they end up 50 points over the Round of 8 cut line. At the other end of the standings, along the Round of 8 cut line, sits Nice Motorsports number 42 Chevrolet in the eighth and final transfer spot on points. That's up 7 points over Thor Sport Racing's 98 team in ninth and 12 points up on team DGR's number 17 Ford. So that's the owner playoff points that we're talking about there, and that's all a big part of this.
Well, and try to clarify that real quick if I can, keeping in mind, because my first thought was there why Grant Enfinger wasn't, but based on the part-time wins, specifically by Corey Heim, the 51 was in, and not Grant Enfinger, if you recall, he got in at the bottom via point. Advanced to the next round now with a win, so great on him, and we'll get to that a little bit further up here.
Okay.
As we look off to look at the playoff clinch scenarios now ahead with Richmond, with one of the three races in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series playoffs in the books, the clinch scenarios for the 10-driver field now, obviously Grant Enfinger clinches with his victory. Clinching via points, if there's a repeat winner, which at this point in this first round of three races would be an Enfinger, or a win by a driver who cannot advance to the next round, drivers being able to clinch would need to be 56 points above the seventh winless driver in the standings. The same requirements listed below would hold true if a new win comes from among Zane Smith, Ben Rhodes, Stuart Friesen, John Hunter Nemechek, Chandler Smith, or Ty Majeski. And all of them at this point, again, it's a three-race shootout. They start reset on points. So Zane Smith, Ben Rhodes, Stuart Friesen, John Hunter Nemechek, Chandler Smith, and Ty Majeski can all only clinch with help. Now, if there's a new winner from Carson Hocevar or a winless driver lower in the standings but still eligible to advance to the next round, again, you need 56 points above the six winless drivers. The same list of drivers would need some help to do so. They can't get enough points yet in this second race. The drivers,
yeah,
all of them are
not on the second list.
Oh, you're right. He can't even do it with help. Okay, I see that.
Mm-hmm.
The following drivers, any one of the nine remaining drivers, Zane Smith, Ben Rhodes, Stuart Friesen, John Hunter Nemechek, Chandler Smith, Ty Majeski, Carson Hocevar, Matt Crafton, or Christian Eckes can advance with a win. That's the benefit of this playoff format. The win moves you on.
Exactly right. Now, there's some drivers that are on the outside looking in, including Thor Sport Racing teammates Crafton and Eckes, needing a bounce back. Following the Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park, Thor Sport Racing teammates Matt Crafton and Christian Eckes find themselves below the series round of eight cut line, which is two races left to turn their postseason runs around. Now, last weekend, three-time series champ Matt Crafton rallied to a ninth-place finish at Indianapolis and left the .686-mile track just 7 points behind from the round of eight cut line. Now, Crafton is the only driver in the series history to participate in each of the series playoffs since its inception in 2016, and he has earned a spot in the round of eight in all six previous postseason appearances. So hopefully he'll be able to do that again this season. But unlike the extensive playoff experience that Crafton has, his teammate Christian Eckes is just in his second appearance in the Truck Series playoffs, and he's hoping to build on his postseason debut in 2020, but he was eliminated in the round of 10. Now, Eckes finished 16th at Indianapolis and has the same points total as Crafton at 2,029 points. Eckes right now is 7 points behind Carson Hocevar in eighth, and he holds the final transfer spot to the round of eight on points. So it's going to be interesting to see if Crafton and Eckes can push themselves above that cut line.
Well, and that relays to the next topic here, these playoffs being busted wide open after just one race. Talk about Matt Crafton and Eckes needing that win to leapfrog. That's what GMS Racing's Grant Enfinger did. He entered last weekend's playoff opener as the ninth seed, and now on the heels of his big win last weekend at Indianapolis, finds himself as the only driver that has clinched a spot into the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series playoffs round of eight. And with that playoff standing shuffled like a deck of cards, these nine other drivers now are still vying to secure their spot in that next round of the playoffs as we prepare for the series race at Richmond Raceway, the Worldwide Express 250 for Carrier Appreciation. That'll come on Saturday, August 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern on FS1, MRN, and SiriusXM Radio. Now, the favorite to join Enfinger in the next round in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series playoffs still has to be the 2022 regular season champion, Zane Smith. Coming into the playoffs as the number one seed and regular season champion, driver of the number 38 Front Row Motorsports Ford brought with him 37 playoff points. And after his third place finish at Indianapolis, he is the first driver without a win in the playoff outlook standings, up 50 points on the round of eight cut line at 2,079. Now finishing runner-up to Enfinger at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park, that was Thor Sports Racing's Ben Rhodes. He's the 2021 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series champion, and he looks poised to go after his second title this season as he carries 2,065 points into Richmond next weekend. He currently sits third in the playoff outlook. He's 36 points above that cut line and just 14 back from Zane Smith in the playoff standings points lead as far as points advancements. Halmar Friesen's racing Stuart Friesen. He's currently fourth in the playoff outlook standings following his fourth place finish at Indianapolis. He is up 28 points on the round of eight cut line. Now, Friesen earned a spot into the playoffs three times in his career, and in all three appearances, he has advanced to the round of eight in 2018, 19, and 2021. Then we got to look at Kyle Busch Motorsports, though. Teammates John Hunter Nemechek and Chandler Smith, and they're neck and neck. They're tied in the Camping World Truck Series playoffs following Indianapolis. Nemechek, however, holds the tiebreaker with the best finish in the round with his 10th place run last weekend compared to Smith's 18th. Both drivers currently 24 points up on the round of eight cut line. Now, the two drivers currently occupying the last two spots that would move them forward to the round of eight based on points are Ty Majeski and Carson Hocevar. Majeski had a very well-rounded run at Indianapolis, which involved picking up a stage win and an eighth place outing. Hocevar, while running up near the front most of the night, had a late incident with the 91 truck of Colby Howard, unfortunately, relegated him to a 21st place finish. Majeski heads into Richmond next week up 19 points above the round of eight cut line, and Nice Motorsports driver Carson Hocevar only has a 7-point lead on ninth in the playoff outlook standings. But what should be making the young driver even more nervous is with two races to go, if one of those drivers below him in those playoff standings were to win, he would be the one bounced below that cut line and end out of the final transfer spot on points.
Okay, we've been talking quite a bit here, too, about GMS Racing's Grant Enfinger and how he's jumped out front with his victory in the playoff opener. The first of the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series playoffs was at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park last weekend. And the race in 11 years has not disappointed. Tasked with opening the 2022 playoffs at the .686-mile flat-paved track located just outside of Indianapolis, Indiana produced some stellar side-by-side racing that went into overtime and ultimately came up with Grant Enfinger of GMS Racing as the victor for the night. Enfinger, winless on the season before Friday's race, grabbed the impressive victory along with a spot into the next round of the playoffs. The win last weekend at Indianapolis was Enfinger's seventh career victory in the series and his third playoff win of his career. He won at Las Vegas in 2018 and Martinsville in 2020. Now the Fairhope, Alabama native is looking to carry that postseason momentum to Richmond Raceway, where he can focus on racking up playoff points, as he's the only driver currently locked into the round of eight. Now, with Enfinger being the only playoff driver for GMS Racing this season, he will also look to keep the championship four-round streak alive, as they have had at least one driver earn a spot in that championship four each of the last seven seasons since the current playoff format was introduced in 2016. So I look for Grant Enfinger to be on a roll, especially with the momentum that he's going to be carrying forward from last week.
Well, and when I look at this, I mean, I really look at a full redemption story. Last year, he missed one race. He had to piece together his schedule, being that he wasn't full-time in one ride, but he was ineligible for the playoffs and would have had a deep run. I know this year, with switching over to the back to GMS, that there was some concern. He hadn't won a race. No better time to win than in the playoffs, because that moves you on.
Exactly right. All right, we're going to go ahead now and move on to the NASCAR Xfinity Series. They're racing at Michigan International Speedway this weekend in the New Holland 250 on Saturday, August the 6th. It's a big week, a big day of racing. That race starts at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. USA will carry the pre-race coverage at 3 p.m. Eastern, along with MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Channel 90. Now, this race will be 250 miles, 125 laps. The first two stages are 30 laps apiece, with stage one ending on lap 30, stage two on lap 60. The last stage will be 65 laps and will end on lap 125. The purse for this race, $1,269,941.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Let me look at some drivers making some news. First, we're going to talk about Ty Gibbs. He'll make his third. Making sure I'm still in the Xfinity Series. Ty Gibbs will make his third Cup Series start at Michigan. 19-year-old Ty Gibbs was called up to fill in for Kurt Busch in the number 45-2311 Racing Toyota. It's following an incident in Busch-like pole qualifying at Pocono Raceway. Now, although his only prior experience in a Cup Series car was a simulator, he pulled off the 16th place finish. After Busch was not cleared to run in last weekend's Verizon 200 at the Brickyard, Gibbs was once again asked to get behind the wheel of the Busch's number 45 Toyota for the race, and seemed a little more comfortable this time around, racing his way to a 17th place finish after starting in the 26th position. Now Gibbs will run double duty this weekend and get into the number 45 for a third time, as Busch still has not been cleared to get behind the wheel. Do you want me to read Busch's statement?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Busch has released the following statement via his social media. Says, while I am continuing to make improvements every day and can't wait to get back in the number 45 Monster Energy Toyota Camry PRD, I have yet to be cleared to return to competition and will not be participating in the NASCAR Cup Series race this weekend at Michigan International Speedway. I know Ty Gibbs will continue to do a great job representing 2311 and the number 45 Monster Energy team this weekend in Michigan. I am working to get hard to get back to 100%, and it's my hope to be back in the car at Richmond Raceway. Thanks to everyone for continued support, and I look forward to being back on the track soon. Now, Gibbs has posted one Xfinity Series start at Michigan International Speedway coming in 2021, where he finished 13th.
Okay. And we've already spent a little time talking about this with Richard Childress's Richard Childress Racing's Austin Hill making his Cup Series debut this weekend. The Xfinity Series rookie Austin Hill is making his Cup Series debut at Michigan in the third RCR entry. He'll be behind the wheel again of that number 33 Chevrolet. Hill will become the eighth different driver to make their Cup Series career debut this season. He joins Todd Gilliland, who did that at Daytona, Noah Gregson also at Daytona, Loris Hesemans at COTA, Josh Williams on Bristol on dirt, Zane Smith at Gateway, Ty Gibbs at Pocono, Danielle Kvyat at Indianapolis's road course. So just a little bit of more information there about Austin Hill's Cup Series debut.
As we get into Michigan, we got a winter streak going on. Michigan International Speedway is currently riding a wave of different winners in the NASCAR Xfinity Series that has reached 11 different winners, dates back to 2010. So this weekend, the New Holland 250 has the chance to produce the 12th different winner and keep the streak going. Only one former winner has entered into this weekend's Xfinity Series race in hopes of becoming the first repeat winner in 11 races and defend his 2021 victory, and that's A.J. Allmendinger. Look at the streak of different winners that began in 2010. It was with Brad Keselowski, Carl Edwards in 2011, 2012, Joey Logano, Regan Smith in 13, Paul Menard in 14, Kyle Busch in 2015, Daniel Suarez came on the scene in 16, Denny Hamlin in 17, 18 was Austin Dillon, Tyler Reddick in 19, and then missed 2020 due to the pandemic, and A.J. Allmendinger picking up the 2021 victory. Now, although Allmendinger is the only driver in this weekend's New Holland 250 with a win, there are a few drivers that may bring heat to keep that streak alive. We got Junior Motorsports, Noah Gregson's two starts at the 2 mile Michigan track. He's posted a runner-up finish in 2019 and a third-place finish in 2021. This season, he's already posted three wins and has brought his A-game on super speedways, finishing third in Daytona and posting a win at Talladega. Perhaps win number four will come this weekend at Michigan. And we got his teammate, JRM Justin Allgaier, has given the track a go 10 times. He's posted two top fives and six top tens. He's had a standout season thus far as well, picking up three wins, nine top fives, and 14 top tens. With the experience he has on the track, he'll look to use that to his advantage to pull off his fourth win of the season and the 20th of his Xfinity Series career.
Okay, well, this weekend, the Xfinity Series is back on the oval in the Michigan Irish Hills. They've had some fun making left and right turns last weekend, but now they switch gears to race at Michigan International Speedway's 2 mile oval for the New Holland 250 on Saturday. Now, Michigan has produced 21 race winners and 22 pole winners in 29 Xfinity Series races. Of the 29 events, only three races have been won from the pole or the first starting spot. Brad Keselowski did it in 2010, Carl Edwards in 2008, and Jeff Burton in 1998. Eight different winners are tied for the most wins at the track. They, with two victories each, are Todd Bodine in 92 and 2000, Kyle Busch in 2004 and 15, Dale Earnhardt Jr. in 99, again in 2006, Denny Hamlin in 2007 and again in 2017, Carl Edwards in 2008 and 2011, Brad Keselowski 2009 and 10, Mark Martin in 1993 and 95, Ryan Newman in 2001 and 5, and of the 21 former winners at Michigan, only one is entered this weekend, and that's A.J. Allmendinger, who won there in 2021. Now, Michigan is a place for first for a few drivers. We're talking about Ryan Newman in 2001 and Daniel Suarez in 2016. Each posted their first win at the track, while Derek Cope in 2094 and Casey Kane in 2003, along with Austin Dillon in 2012, each won their first pole at Michigan. Now, the drivers will jump start the weekend on Saturday with practice at 9:05 a.m., that's Eastern time, followed by qualifying at 9:35 a.m., also Eastern time, and it will also be streamed live on the NBC Sports app.
When you talk about dreams coming true, they certainly do for A.J. Allmendinger. When asked what Indianapolis Motor Speedway meant to A.J. Allmendinger, he responded, "There is no bigger track for me." Then it should be no surprise that it was a dream come true for the road course ace to win for the second year in a row at the one facility that is so dear to his heart. In college racing, A.J. Allmendinger raised his level of performance to meet the occasion last weekend when he won the pole for the Pennzoil 150 at the Brickyard and went on to dominate the closing laps of the race to win by 2.084 seconds over second place Alex Bowman. Now, although that was his first NASCAR Xfinity Series win at the track, he was no stranger to kissing the bricks. In last season's Cup Series race at Indianapolis, he shocked the Premier Series by racing his way to the finish line to claim his first career win at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It was also College Racing's first Cup win. Now, Allmendinger does seem to have a knack for road courses, as all three of his wins this season have been on road courses, coming at COTA, the Circuit of America, Portland, and now Indianapolis. And he currently sits as the all-time road course wins leader in the Xfinity Series with 9 victories. The number 16 College Racing Chevrolet driver has posted at least one win on all Xfinity Series road courses on the circuit except for one, and that's Watkins Glen International. Now, but he might just check that off his list when the Xfinity Series heads to the Glen on August 20th, as he has posted a runner-up finish in 2 out of his 3 starts at the track. With 3 wins total, 9 top fives, and 17 top tens this season thus far, Allmendinger is definitely keeping his eye on the regular season championship. He currently leads the standings with 789 points, which is 17 points up from Junior Motorsports' Justin Allgaier in second place and 30 points up from Ty Gibbs, who's in third. To keep that lead, he'll have to bring the heat on the remaining tracks on the regular season schedule, which includes Michigan, Watkins Glen, Daytona, Darlington, Kansas, and then Bristol. Look at how he's done on those tracks that make up the rest of the regular season. Michigan, he posted the win in his only Xfinity Series start at the track in 2021. Mentioned Watkins Glen, 2 runner-up finishes in 2018 and 2021 in 3 starts. In Daytona, he's got 3 top fives and 3 top tens in 5 starts. Finished runner-up there back in February. In Darlington, he's got 1 top 10 in 2022 in 3 Xfinity Series starts. For Kansas, it's 1 top 5 and 1 top 10 in just 2 starts. And then 1 win in 2021 at Bristol and 1 top 5, 2 top 10s, and those coming in just 2 starts.
Okay. So that's all we have there for the Xfinity Series. We'll go ahead and move on to the Cup Series, and there is quite a bit of information there. So we'll probably need all that extra time. The next race for the Cup Series is the Firekeepers Casino 400 at Michigan International Speedway. That will take place Sunday, August the 7th at 3 p.m. Eastern. Pre-race coverage will be on USA at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and then MRN and SiriusXM Channel 90. They'll be racing a distance of 400 miles over 200 laps. The first stage is 45 laps and ends on lap 45. Second stage ends on lap 120, and the third stage is 80 laps, ending on lap 200. So the purse for this race is a whopping $7,125,085.
Well, the first thing we're going to look at is Cole Grand Marshals. You got Michigan State coaches Tom Izzo and Mel Tucker to serve as the co-grand marshals on Sunday. Michigan International Speedway announced in July that Michigan State University's men's basketball head coach Tom Izzo and the football head coach Mel Tucker to serve as co-grand marshals for the NASCAR Cup Series Firekeepers Casino 400 here on August 7th. As part of the responsibilities, the Spartan coaches will give that command of drivers start your engines to kick off this 200-lap race, the biggest of the year at Michigan International Speedway. Firekeepers Casino 400 starts at 3 p.m. Eastern, and as mentioned, will air on USA, MRN, and Sirius XM Radio. The duo will also be guests at the Ziegler Auto Group and anchor sponsor Josh Balicki's Spire Motorsport Chevrolet. And in addition, Balecki's number 77, Michigan State University Ziegler Automotive Chevrolet, will feature a special Michigan State paint scheme. I haven't seen that paint scheme. That should look pretty cool.
That is very cool. Now, Keselowski is planning a visit the National All-Domain Warfighting Center during the Northern Strike exercise. So ahead of this week's race at Michigan, Michigan native and the 2012 NASCAR Cup Series champion, Brad Keselowski is making a special visit to the National All-Domain Warfighting Center during the Michigan National Guard signature exercise, the Northern Strike 22. Now, Keselowski is going to meet with soldiers and airmen participating in the Northern Strike, the National Guard's largest joint reserve component exercise held annually at the National All-Domain Warfighting Center, which includes Camp Grayling and Alpena Combat Readiness Center. Now, there is some media availability that's scheduled at Camp Grayling, and that will be at 2 p.m. Eastern. Media members will have an opportunity to talk to Keselowski about his experience, and as fans, you'll want to pay attention to see what they're writing about his visit there.
I know a lot of different drivers do a lot of different things, but Keselowski is one that does a lot with the military, and I just want to give a big shout out to him for that as a former military member. So appreciate that.
Yes, indeed.
Now we're going to look into the matchups this weekend if you're a betting person or just to have fun with. I'm going to start at the bottom here with Daniel Suarez versus Bubba Wallace. Daniel Suarez and Bubba Wallace are both having the best years of their careers. Suarez got his first career win at Sonoma earlier this season, while Bubba has had three top fives this year, the most in his career. Following a fifth-place finish at Indianapolis, Wallace has garnered tons of momentum as the regular season window winds down. Both of these teams deliver cars that perform well at higher downforce tracks, and Michigan should be a promising opportunity for both 2311 and Trackhouse.
Okay, our next matchup is Kevin Harvick and Joey Logano, winners of four of the last five races at Michigan. Now, this is a track that Kevin Harvick and Joey Logano both love. They also hold two of the three best driver ratings in the field, with Harvick at 122.9 and Logano at 105.2. It's safe to say that both of these Fords will be threats to win on Saturday. We'll see if the next-gen car can keep that momentum going.
Now, I was going to say, now, who doesn't want to see Harvick and Logano go at it along with their wives?
Exactly.
That's a flashback if you aren't a long-term NASCAR fan. Ryan Blaney versus William Byron, the Bees. Who can forget the battle these two put on last year at Michigan? Ryan Blaney held off multiple runs from William Byron with a perfectly timed block and beat Byron by half a car length to the finish line to win the 2021 Firekeeper Casino 400. Blaney and Byron are two of the better full-throttle drivers in the Cup Series, which is a perfect for a track like Michigan where drivers rarely break. And both of these wheelmen will be looking forward to Michigan as a potential spot to grab that much-needed victory.
Okay, our final matchup includes Tyler Reddick versus Denny Hamlin. Now, the fan vote this week wanted to see last week's winner, Tyler Reddick, matched up against Denny Hamlin. So both are winless in the last five races at Michigan, but Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin finished in the top 5 and 3 of his last four starts at that two-mile track. Now, Hamlin was competing for a win last year at Michigan, but he ultimately finished fifth. Reddick was running in the top 10 all day, but then he got loose, and that was late in the race. He spun out, finishing 29th. Now, Hamlin may have the edge on paper in this matchup, but Reddick has been outrunning his odds all year long. So I got to give the edge to Tyler Reddick because he's got a lot of momentum on his side this weekend.
Yeah, I can see where that was the fan vote one. That one definitely has an interesting aspect to it. Now, Ford Motor Company, we were talking about a Chevrolet and a Toyota there, but we got to move to Ford as the Ford Motor Company goes for the 8th straight win at Michigan. This weekend at MIS, Ford will be looking for that visit to victory lane for the 8th consecutive time in the NASCAR Cup Series at the engine manufacturer's home track. Ford enters the weekend having won the last 7 consecutive NASCAR Cup Series races at Michigan International Speedway, going from 2018 through 2021. And this weekend, they'll look to keep that streak alive, which is the longest consecutive wins by a manufacturer at the two-mile facility. Looking at the streak, starting with Clint Bowyer back in June of 2018 and Kevin Harvick in August of 18. In 19, it was Joey Logano in June and Kevin Harvick in August. And then again in 2020, that was, during the pandemic. Yeah, there we go. The dates threw me. August 8th and 9th, Kevin Harvick did the sweep for the year, putting him having 3 in a row. And then Ryan Blaney, we mentioned, in 2021 in the August race. Now, 8 different manufacturers total have won in the NASCAR Cup Series at Michigan. It's led by Ford with 42 victories. It's followed by Chevrolet with drops back to 26. Mercury has 12, Dodge 9, Toyota 5, Buick's got 4, Pontiac's got 4, and then Oldsmobile's got a pair.
Okay, now some people are wondering if Michigan is going to be the place that Kyle Larson rights the ship. The 21 Cup Series champion, season's wins leader, has with 10 victories. Kyle Larson rolled into Michigan last year already with 5 victories under his belt. Now fast forward to this season, and the California native is heading back to the two-mile track, having not celebrated a series win since Auto Club Speedway, and that was back in February. With the playoffs looming and the series heading to a similarly shaped two-mile track this weekend, could Michigan be the site that Larson gets back into his winning ways? Well, the phenom from Elk Grove, California, Kyle Larson, is looking to build some momentum heading into the playoffs. As he continues his quest to become the first driver since Jimmy Johnson with back-to-back championships in 2006 through 10 and then 2013 and 16 to win consecutive Cup Series champions and join Kyle Busch as the only active multi-time title holder. Now, Larson has made 13 Cup Series career starts at Michigan. He's posted 3 wins in 2016 and then with a sweep in 17, 6 top 5s and 7 top 10s, Larson in 2016 and NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Jarrett in 1991 are the only two drivers in the Cup Series history to win the first career series race at Michigan International Speedway.
Well, where's the next?
Keselowski and Jones.
There we go. Keselowski and Jones are both chasing home track success this weekend at Michigan. RFK Racing driver Brad Keselowski comes from Rochester Hills, and Petty GMS Motorsports Eric Jones from Byron are returning to the great state of Michigan this weekend to compete at their home track, Michigan International Speedway. A total of 101 different drivers in the NASCAR National Series have their home state recorded in Michigan, and nine of those 101 have won at least one race in the NASCAR National Series. Now, Michigan drivers have combined to win 158 National Series races, led by RFK Racing's Brad Keselowski, who's won a combined 75 NASCAR National Series races, nearly half of the state's total. Now, for Brad Keselowski, it's 35 on the Cup level, 39 in the Xfinity, one in the trucks for those 75. Paul Goldsmith has nine in the Cup for his nine combined. Eric Jones is broken up on two on the Cup side, nine on the Xfinity Series, and seven at the truck level for a total of 18. Johnny Benson, he's got one in the Cup Series, three in the Xfinity, and 14 in the truck series for a total of 18. Tim Fiedler, I love these throwback names. Tim Fiedler has got four in the Xfinity Series for his combined four. Butch Miller with three has two in the Xfinity Series, one in the trucks. Tracy Leslie, we heard that name earlier. His lone win was in the Xfinity Series. And then Jack Sprague, he's got one in the Xfinity Series and a monstrous 28 in the truck series for a total of 29. And Bob Keselowski. He has one in the truck series, and that came at came in the truck series for his total of one. And next to Martin Truex Jr.'s 31 winless streak, next to Martin Truex's 31 winless starts at Michigan, Brad Keselowski has made the second most starts among active drivers at Michigan without a trip to victory lane at 24. But in his 23 previous starts, he has put up seven top fives and 13 top tens, including three runner-up finishes, coming in 2012, 18, and 2020. Average finish at 12.5 is fourth best among active drivers. The Petty GMS Motorsports, Eric Jones, he's tied with Johnny Benson Jr. for the third most combined NASCAR National Series wins by a driver from Michigan with 18 each, behind only Keselowski with 75 and Jack Sprague, who comes out of Spring Lake with 29. Jones has made nine Cup Series starts at Michigan, posting one top five, coming back home third and back in 2017. His average finish is 16.6, and he finished 18th here at Michigan last season.
Okay, now we've been talking about Austin Hill making his Cup Series debut at Michigan. Richard Childress Racing has had an action-packed few weeks, winning at Indianapolis Road Course over the weekend with Tyler Reddick, and then announcing this week that rising star Austin Hill is making his Cup Series career debut for the organization this Sunday in the Firekeeper Casino 400 at Michigan. Now, prior, Hill is becoming the 42nd different driver to make a start in the Cup Series for Richard Childress Racing. Prior to this weekend, Hill has been spending his 2022 season competing for a championship in the Xfinity Series, also piloting the number 21 for Richard Childress Racing's Chevrolet. And in 20 Xfinity Series starts this year, Hill has two wins, Daytona and Atlanta, eight top fives, 13 top tens, and he also leads the Xfinity Series Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings. Now, Hill will pull double duty this weekend, competing in both races at Michigan. Austin Hill did win at Michigan in the Camping World Truck Series in 2019. We'll see if he can pull that off this weekend.
Now, the race to the playoffs, winning might be the only option here coming up soon. The 2022 NASCAR Cup Series has produced 14 different winners, tied with the 2017 season for the most different winners through the 22 races during this elimination-style playoff era. And that playoff era runs from 2014 to 2022. Now, that leaves just two spots up for grabs on points as the series heads to Michigan International Speedway for the race number 23 of the season. And that leaves just four races remaining in the NASCAR Cup Series regular season, and tensions are running high in that garage area for the competition that haven't secured their spot in the postseason. Currently, the final two remaining playoff transfer spots on points are occupied by Team Penske's Ryan Blaney in 15th, who has a 121-point cushion above the cut line, and Joe Gibbs Racing's Martin Truex, who's in 16th and is 96 points above the cut line. Now, heading into Sunday at Michigan International Speedway, several former winners on the track will be looking to return to victory lane this weekend, especially those that are winless on the year. Of that group, Stuart Haas Racing's Kevin Harvick bolsters the most success at the two-mile track, with wins in all three of NASCAR's National Series, including the series most among active drivers at five in the NASCAR Cup Series. He also has a victory in the Xfinity Series in 2003 and in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series back in 2011. Now, Harvick and Kyle Busch are the only two active drivers with wins in all three of NASCAR's National Series at Michigan. Team Penske's Ryan Blaney is the only other former active Cup Series Michigan winner and still looking for his first win on the season. RFK Racing's Brad Keselowski has two wins, and Richard Childress Racing's Austin Dillon has one win. Each has NASCAR Xfinity Series victories at Michigan International Speedway, and both need a win this season to get into the NASCAR Cup Series playoff. In last season's Cup race, Keselowski finished ninth, and Dillon was caught up in an incident which relegated him to a 36th place finish. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that incident involved Brad Keselowski, but 2311 Racing's Bubba Wallace and Stuart Haas Racing's Eric Almirola each have won NASCAR Camping World Truck Series races at Michigan and are looking for their first wins of the 2022 NASCAR Cup Series season. Last year, Almirola finished 17th and Wallace 19th in the Cup race.
Okay, we're running out of time here, so I'm going to really streamline these next topics. We know that Harvick's on the outside looking in, and he's on a winless streak that date Bristol Motor Speedway on September 19th of 2020, 65 races ago. But it's we wanted to make note of the fact that Stuart Haas Racing announced a reshuffle of their competition leadership within the organization, and one driver hoping it pays dividends in their success, of course, is Kevin Harvick, who sits 17th on that playoff standings outlook. He's 96 points back from the postseason cut line with just four races left in the regular season. But you may recall that we mentioned earlier that he is one of the drivers that has a really good driver rating at that track, so he's certainly one to look for. Also, Team Penske's Ryan Blaney returns to Michigan hoping he can go back-to-back. He also needs a win this season, and he's hoping that he can return to victory lane and make it back-to-back victories at that two-mile facility with a win this weekend. If he does that, he'll be the 11th different driver to win consecutive Cup Series races at Michigan, joining several other drivers. Also, just some stats The Cup Series is set to bring all the high-speed action to Michigan this weekend. There'll be a lot of competitors on the track, many of them looking for a victory without a doubt. The weekend at Michigan, the track activity kicks off with practice on Saturday, August the 6th at 12:35 p.m., directly followed by the Busch Light pole qualifying at 1:20. Both events can be viewed on the NBC Sports app at 12:30. The first starting position is the most proficient starting position in the field. That's produced the most Cup Series winners, 22, than any other starting position at Michigan. 21 winners from the pole, and one of them from the first starting position due to qualifying being canceled in 1985 was Bill Elliott. The most recent driver to win from the pole at Michigan was Joey Logano in 19. And the deepest in the field that a race winner has started at Michigan is 32nd, and that was by NASCAR Hall of Famer Mark Martin in the spring of 2009. So a lot to look forward to at Michigan this weekend. We're a minute past the hour, Jay, but it's only you and I that's here for NASCAR Hot Topics tonight. So what's your first hot topic that you want to talk about?
Well, I guess it would be where's everybody else? No, I thought Andy said he was going to be able to make it, but he might have had something come
up.
Yeah,
that changed. He had to come back and say, okay. Nope, sorry, can't do it.
Went back and forth then, I guess, okay. First one I guess we'll look at, I know Mike had put it up, we talked about it. Kurt Busch is out for the third consecutive week, and Ty Gibbs will be filling in. We'll talk a little bit about that. There's two aspects to it of Kurt Busch, not just the concussion protocol this year. We know he's got a waiver, but also we've talked about his future at 2311 and in the NASCAR Cup Series and possibly racing.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's taken so long for him to make this recovery. I did see a video of him at a baseball game. I guess the advice was that he needed to be in an area that had a lot of noise to see how he handled that. And so he was at a baseball game to try to give himself a little bit of a test, if you will. But, yeah, it is concerning that it's taken this long for him to kind of make that recovery. You recall that this happened to Dale Earnhardt Jr. a few years ago, and he ended up leaving the sport as a result because he didn't want to take any more chances of sustaining that similar type of concussion. So it will be interesting to see how Kurt Busch continues his recovery with this, and if he is able to return back to racing. It could very possibly end up in resulting in an early retirement for Kurt Busch, and I know it's going to be disappointing for him should that happen. But at the same time, he seems like a pretty healthy guy, and I know Dale Jr. is too, but we'll just kind of have to wait and see how the rest of this story plays out. I know Mike made some comments about it. He said, I hate this so much. I hope Kurt does get better soon. His redemption arc is one of the best stories in NASCAR, and it really sucks that one of his final seasons might go like this. I'm sure Ty will do well, but I hope Kurt is able to return at least in time for the playoffs. So, and that could be very well what he's trying to do is make sure that he's healthy for those playoffs, and maybe erring on the side of caution to make sure that he's in the best shape possible going into the playoffs.
Well, you're right on one aspect, and I'll start this with on the side of Kurt Busch. First off, making sure you are 100% healthy. I know this really came to highlight with Dale Earnhardt Jr., but we've seen it with some other drivers in the past. And I can't remember who it was I was having the discussion with. and we referenced the movie Days of Thunder. It may seem like it's not that big a thing or you don't have any symptoms, but as you mentioned, going to a crowded stadium such as a baseball game, I'm sure they didn't have to force Kurt Busch real hard to go to a baseball game. I know he's a big fan, especially of the Cubs, but
things
like that that you don't realize, say you're at the game and that's bothering you, you may not relate back to the concussion issue from, and when we talk about this, the hit at Pocono wasn't necessarily that big a hit or the problem. That might be just what triggered it, having had previous years of driving crashes and whatnot. I mean, even just being in the car itself puts a certain amount of pressure on the brain, whether you crash or not. So you never know. I know I learned personally so much with when Dale Earnhardt Jr. went through it and detailed some of the things they talk about him going through. This going to the crowd with Kurt Busch, that's a new one. I understand it, and I mean, it makes sense. It wasn't one I would thought of as, you know, a doctor's test. I'll go to a baseball game, see how it goes. You know, I'm like, that's the doctor's recommendation, right? But those type of things can tell you that. So I do like the fact that they are taking their time. They have a viable driver filling in, such as Ty Gibbs, benefits him. I know it's not, and I'll go into that on the return trip, but they have the option. And as you mentioned, you 100% want to be ready. If you're coming back this year, be coming back at full speed for the playoffs. So I think they're going about it the right way. And as I said, I know NASCAR as a whole, we learned a lot about this whole process and what needs to be done from Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Yes, and he kind of was the first driver that really said, I need to take care of my health before anything else, because he had a family and he wanted to be there for his family. So I really applaud Dale for doing that. But I'm also applauding Kurt Busch for taking that time as well. I think Dale did to kind of lead the way there. And, you know, even football players go through this, and that it hasn't always been recognized as being a serious injury as it has been in more recent years. So, again, I think the medical field has come a long way in helping to treat these types of things, because in the past I think these kinds of injuries have gone untreated, and it's had disastrous results for some people. So I really am happy that they're taking the time here and taking advantage of the advances in the medical industry to be able to treat concussion-related injuries. So, again, just kudos for taking the time to do that. And I look forward to when Kurt Busch will be able to come back. We'll have to, again, time will tell the rest of the story there. So not much we can say about that until it happens.
Well, one thing, and I know I said I'd talk more about Ty Gibbs on the second go-round here, which I will a little bit, making the most of that opportunity. It obviously wasn't the situation he wanted to be in for it, for Kurt or anybody, but is making the most of it, has done phenomenal, in my opinion, in those starts, not pushing himself, racing solid, getting top 15, top 16, 17 position finishes. So it's been real good for him. When I look at Kurt Busch, and you know, I don't remember if it was you or if you were reading from what Mike said of it, but to already have gone through the career resurrection, having gotten a victory in the 23-11 racing team this year in that number 45, the improvement he brings to every team he's been a part of, I know we're reaching, he had talked about the possibility of his retirement, at least from NASCAR, possibly wanting to do some other racing, but for it to be on his terms. And I know that's part of why Dale Earnhardt Jr. did come back at least for another full season afterwards, because he did want it to be on his terms, but that did push it up a little. I do hope that Kurt is able to come back this year, make a run in the playoffs, and if he so chooses, he's still under contract for next year, to race next year, and then it be his decision as to whether or not he has to step away. Not the fact of it's a medical thing or, you know, he can't get back and then loses his ride or whatever else happens. You want that for every driver. And I think about, I know we were all disappointed, didn't like to see it, but Carl Edwards. He was where he was at. He was happy and decided he wanted to step away, and he did it on his terms. It might not have been good terms on other people's parts, but he did do it on his terms.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Again, we wish Kurt the very best and hope that he does recover well. All right, what's our next hot topic going to be?
All right, let's see what else we got here on our list anyway. I know you put one up here, the trailer for USA Network's new NASCAR docuseries that will premiere September 1st. This one's a NASCAR one.
Yes. Yeah, I'm kind of excited about this. It was put up by Adam Stern, and NASCAR has put together a docuseries that will premiere on September the 1st that kind of documents, I think, the whole idea. And it doesn't really say here about if it's going from Daytona for the regular season of the NASCAR Cup Series through the end of the regular season, or if it's going to start with the playoffs. But it gets into the lives of some of these drivers and their families and, you know, kind of indicating that they are more than just NASCAR drivers. There are things that they do that are off the track as well. So it's going to be kind of exciting to see some of those behind-the-scenes personal moments for some of these drivers as well. I apologize. My dog is trying to talk to me here in the background. So if there's anything more that you want to say there.
Yeah, this you use the word exciting. This is one of those. I'm on the side of I'm there to watch racing. So for me, this isn't necessarily a high priority. However, I appreciate that NASCAR is doing it because for some it is, and if it draws attention and brings more fans and involvement, I am all for it. Whether I watch it or not, I am for it, highlighting the sport. Now, there are some interesting things, and again, I'm not attacking or bashing on Austin Dillon's Life in the Fast Lane, I believe is the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have occasionally glanced at it. It is just not my thing. So with that, there are some interesting things of I would like to see. Being that I've been around the racing community, I understand the travels and some of the things that teams and drivers go through. Some of the things they do, we mentioned Brad Keselowski doing with his time for the military and his off time. All of them have their organizations and charities that they work for, and some of them don't like to be public about it. That aspect I do kind of, I find certain aspects to it interesting. Like I said, it is not one I got to make sure I'm home at this time to watch. But if I do see it or record it and scan through it, those are the things I find interesting. Now, I understand, like I said, if they're going to target the mass audience, that maybe I'm not in that. They want to see the home life or whatever else. And like I said, then I'm happy NASCAR's doing it because if that draws more fans in and more to the sport, I'm all for it. If we go week to week and ask about the show and what happened, I probably won't be one to give a whole lot because, yeah, it's not necessarily my priority.
Well, I think it does say at the very end of this trailer that it's NASCAR's race to the championship for some of these drivers. So I think it's going to document some of the drivers that are competing for the championship and the hectic lives that they do have. But that includes the personal time that they have off the track as well. What I like about it, Jay, is that it reminds us that these drivers are more than just race car drivers. They're human beings like the rest of us that have family lives and similar things that happen in their lives that happen in our lives. I think sometimes we do forget that they are human beings that do have personal lives, and we expect a lot of our race car drivers sometimes. And I think it might give us a little bit more of the human side of who these drivers are. And I think that's going to be a very positive thing for the sport, not just to bring in new fans, because I think it will do that. And I think it will create new fans of different drivers, seeing kind of a different perspective of who they are. But I think it's a great thing that they're doing, and looking forward to seeing how it looks when I watch the premiere on September the 1st. I've watched the one that you're talking about with Austin Dillon, and I have to agree with you on that one. Sometimes it does show a personal side to who he is and his friends and everything. It's just not really my cup of tea either. But I see this as something being a little bit different than that, and maybe a little bit more on target of what you and I might be looking for. So I'm looking forward to it.
I do see the value in it, whether it's from the, how do I say it? I want to compare it to the Kardashian or Real Housewives or something like that, reality TV. But there are some things, I will watch it and see what it is. There are aspects that, and maybe you and I, being that we are in the racing industry, already see it, know it, and some fans don't. So, again, I see value in it for sure. It's not going to add to me from my perspective as a race fan because, like I said, I'm there to watch the racing. Now, the story of how teams got there certainly should be some interesting aspects to it. The other thing you mentioned there, and I hadn't thought about, not just about drawing in new fans, it may change mine or yours or any regular race fan perspective of a certain driver, as you said, of seeing what they do off the track versus, and I'll go ahead and throw a name out there. I'll use Ross Chastain. Okay, he's an aggressive driver, whatever. Okay, so, but if you get into who he is away from the track, maybe your opinion of him does change. So that was an aspect I hadn't really thought about, that maybe you do end up with a different favorite driver to pull for or whatnot. So, yeah, there's definitely value in it. I would never dispute that.
Yeah, Ross Chastain just happens to be one of those drivers that I've had some interactions with, and you couldn't ask for a nicer guy. He's been on our radio show quite a bit when he was racing with JD Motorsports in the Xfinity Series, and he always gave us great interviews, and I just loved interacting with Ross Chastain on that level. But when he's like a lot of other drivers, they're a different person when they get behind the wheel of a race car, and it's all about the racing on the track. So I kind of get that about him because, like you say, we have had a little bit different experience. We're in the industry. We've had a chance to interact with some of these drivers. We don't see everything, obviously, but we do get to see a little bit more of them than some fans. So it's just I think it's going to be an interesting docuseries, and they're going to be documenting these guys as they continue to race for this championship this year, and I think it's going to be very interesting.
Well, I don't know how many people that listen. I know there's several that I talk to that follow here. excuse me. From the local area. So I'm not going to use a name. If somebody figures it out, so be it. But we have a driver around here. The nickname is Black Flag. He is one that if you just come and watch a race, you have questions about and talk about. If you were to sit down with him, whether it be away from, even in the pit area between races, he is the nicest guy in the world. He is one, I think it was Ward Burton that made the quote of, you put the helmet on and you just become dumb or stupid. I don't remember what word he used. This individual is that way. Yes, I've seen him race. I've seen him do some things. I don't know if he straps the helmet on too tight. But he is a different person. So, but excuse me, away from the track, he really is. I ask people that. Have you ever sat and talked with him? And they say no. It's an entirely different person. So I think that will, like you said, open that up. And you're going to have to talk. I got to get something to drink.
Okay, I can do that. I'm curious to see which drivers they focus on. Obviously, it's going to be the playoff drivers, I think. But it is going to be interesting to get that. At the track action, they show some of that happening. I apologize again for my dog. She's really trying to get my attention here. I'm trying to say here that that at the track action, as they contend for the championship, some of the things that they do at the track, which is a very, very busy weekend, especially if they're doing double duty in a couple of different series. I don't know that they do that during the playoffs as much as they do during the regular season, but it's not just off the track, it's on the track too, as they continue to challenge for the championship during this season. So I think it's going to be so much fun to watch, and I think it's going to be compelling in a lot of ways. So I don't know if Jay's back or not, but I don't know. I've got a lot more to say about this, Jay.
No, you're right. It, definitely worth a watch. And you were apologizing for your dog. I wish I could have blamed mine on my dog, but that was something in my throat. But I took my dog outside, so I haven't heard back from him yet. No,
oh,
definitely,
okay.
Like I said, I will watch it and see what it is, whether it's something I watch on a regular basis. There's value in it from a lot of different perspectives, even more so that you brought to my mind of seeing some other drivers, you know, that I may even go, hey, I was never a particular fan of his or understood that driver that now I have a different perspective of. So definitely value in it. And like I said, any focus, and it's a good focus, on a sport or its drivers or participants in the sport is a good thing. So I do see it as a good thing. As I mentioned, kind of like with the iRacing, just maybe not my aspect of it that I want to be involved in, but I know there are those that do.
Okay. We don't have a whole lot of topics on our list here today, Jay, so if we get done early, that's not going to hurt my feelings at all. But what's our next hot topic?
Yeah, I was looking at that. The only one was one I had put up was kind of interesting. Stuart Haas Racing made some executive leadership changes here, which I believe, if I recall correctly from reading it, will happen as of
September 1st.
There we go. Okay, the 1st of September. Let's see if I can highlight these. President Brett Frood, who's been part of SHR since its inception in 2009, is departing his day-to-day duties with the team to become commissioner of the National Lacrosse League. And so that's what's brought about some of the changes. He'll remain as an executive advisor to SHR and the board chairman for all Tony Stewart-related entities. The one to me that stands out in here, though, is Greg Zipidelli, who will become SHR's chief competition officer after serving as vice president of competition since 2012. Whereas Joe Custer, currently co-president, he'll continue his leadership role, and the members of the executive team will maintain its fiduciary oversight of SHR co-owners Stuart Haas and Gene Haas, or Tony Stewart and Gene Haas, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, this is kind of an interesting one. You know, Scott Zipidelli was Tony Stewart's crew chief in the Cup Series for 10 years. So they have a long-standing relationship, and he's a very important part of Stewart Haas Racing. So, but they also mentioned that McKinley, let's see, where's his first name? Brian McKinley.
Yeah.
Joined SHR in 2020 and since secured numerous partnerships, including the Mahindra Ag North America, Gear Wrench Subway, Magical Vacation Planner, PristineAuction.com, and Renegade Insurance, among others. Prior to joining SHR, he was the co-head of global partnerships at Feld Entertainment, managing more than $40 million worth of partner activation across 7 live touring properties, including Monster Energy, AMA Supercross, Monster Jam, Disney on Ice. Before his tenure at Feld, McKinley was also vice president of sports marketing at Herbalife International. He led his global sponsorship strategy for the $4 billion health nutrition company that encompassed more than 250 partnerships across 90 countries. So this is a guy, I was trying to figure out what his role was going to be. Do you see what his role is going to be? Oh, Brian McKinley.
Just closed it out.
Fruit is going to assist the transition of Brian McKinley from Vice President of Sales to Chief Commercial Officer for SHR, as well as facilitating the expanded responsibilities of Greg Cipadelli. So he's going to be transitioning into that role that Brian Brett Fruit is leaving open. So that's one of the main people that he'll be consulting with.
There you go. And this kind of goes back to what we were just talking about with the docuseries. When you talk about leadership and executive roles and stuff within an organization, it doesn't always necessarily mean much to the casual fan. But understanding, you mentioned Greg Cipadelli was his crew chief over at Stuart Haas or over at Joe Gibbs Racing, followed him over, became part of the executive leadership at Stuart Haas Racing. Those are important. We saw it most recently, I think, or the one that comes to my mind of, I just lost his name, Jimmy Johnson's crew chief, Chad Knauf.
Chad Knauf.
The role he's moved into. There you go. Executive roles. But so has his hand in, rather than just one car or one team, over all the cars and the teams and the direction they go. The other one, I had another one in mind. Richard Childress has Andy Petrie, I know, as I think his, again, the title, I don't know, an advisory role or whatever, but became part of Richard Childress Racing. They are very important, and whether it be some of the things you were running through there with McKinley from the sponsorship side, side of what that can help, which right now Stuart Haas Racing needs a little bit of help with they're looking at losing Smithfield. So those are all aspects of it. It is not just about the race car and on the track. You know, it is about all these different roles, and no matter what long title you give them or whatever, but it does take all those pieces. And that is one that, again, I don't know if I'd watch a weekly show on, but the little bit of intrigue and interest in some of the roles and things these ones do. And I know I've seen it just on Race Hub. It showed some of Brad Keselowski's of what he's doing in his leadership role at RFK, along with driving the race car. So, yeah, there's a lot of pieces to that puzzle to just get a car out on the track.
Absolutely. And a lot of people don't realize there are so many people who are part of that organization for a racing team. I am going to real quickly make an announcement just in case we do go over, because I think there is that possibility. It might not be as much as it usually is, but we go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m., and we want to make sure that our new listeners that are maybe tuning in for the first time know that even though we go off the air at 10:30, we continue to record our conversation beyond that time. And that becomes part of our bonus overtime material that's going to be available on our podcast. Now, how do you listen to that material? Well, when we go off the air, when we go off the show, when we complete our conversation here, I will go out on Twitter and let you know that the podcast is now available. We do have a player available at fanforracing.com. You can go to that player and just fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of that conversation. And that's true whether you're listening on iTunes or any of the other avenues that we have. We're also on Amazon now. You just fast forward the player to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. So I hope that helps. So I'm just saying that, yeah, there are so many people that are part of an organization, Jay, that I don't think a lot of teams recognize just how many people are involved at multiple different levels throughout an organization to make a race team happen. So, and Stuart Haas Racing has four race cars on the track, So it takes a lot of effort from a lot of different people to make all of that go well. And sponsorship is such a big part of that, because without the sponsorship, a lot of these people can't be racing. So it's important to have people like these executives to be out there looking for that, and people who have had success in gaining sponsorship and recognition of those teams. That's the kind of people you want to have in those roles. So I think it's very good. I'm thankful that Fruit is going to stay on as an advisor, and I think that's going to help these guys make the transition to their new roles.
Most certainly. You know, and it is kind of an interesting scenario there. As I mentioned, a couple of Joe Custer being one of them, as we've talked about that with Cole Custer's role, sponsorship. I mean, logistics. I know Mike likes to talk about that coming from the military side. I'm just thinking about there's one or two people that are in charge of, you know, which trucks are carrying what cars at what point and back and forth. So, yeah, there are so many layers to it. But to see these changes where they're at right now, I hope is a benefit. It's kind of when they're in a struggling mode of, is it going to delay that progression even more, or is it going to be an immediate impact? I know Greg Zipadelli would mention him. Right, yeah, that's the hope. I'm sure that's the intent. I can't even imagine what kind of impact overall that Zipadelli has had there. As you mentioned, the relationship with Tony Stewart goes back a long ways. More invested and more at heart than Tony Stewart, even, not to say he doesn't, but I think Greg Zipadelli has put a lot into that organization, as well as then even going down to your crew chiefs. I know Rodney Childers has talked about it, as he doesn't just talk about the number four team. He talks about it as an organization, Stewart Haas Racing.
Yes, you bring up a lot of really good points there, and I thank you for that. Was there anything else that was on your mind that you wanted to make sure we mentioned here tonight? Maybe it wasn't on our board, but...
Yeah, the only one that wasn't caught my attention, not in breaking news necessarily, but... I lost the Front Row Motorsports has dropped its appeal. I know, and I thought this because I was one that felt like maybe they really did have a case to make, that they weren't just buying time to prepare for the suspensions, but they have chosen to drop their appeal, which then I would have to say maybe I was on the wrong end of that thought process, that they really were just trying to buy time.
Yeah, a lot of times that's kind of one of the first things that we think of anymore when a team comes up with an appeal, is that they need to buy time in order to make the adjustments that they're going to need to make in the absence of a crew chief or the other members that have been suspended. So, that seems like the case here with them dropping the appeal after the Indianapolis race. That they just needed some extra time. I wish there was an avenue for them to do that without the appearance of it being an appeal. I wish they could just go to NASCAR and say, we need one more race or whatever. But right now, that's the only avenue they have of doing that. Maybe NASCAR could give them one race to make that happen. I don't know. But... I don't know. Maybe there shouldn't be. Maybe the appeal has to be. If you say you're going to appeal, then you need to make the effort to make an appeal, and it needs to be a legitimate effort to make an appeal rather than using the appeal process as a means of buying time. I don't know, but it just doesn't seem right for me that they can use that process as a means of buying themselves time. If they're going to do that, give them an avenue to do that. Or if you don't want them to do that, then don't accept the appeal unless they actually have an appeal to bring forward.
Well, you started down that track, and my train followed as well. As it is right now, if that is the case, and we know in several cases, I think it's been publicly stated, that was the entire reason. We don't know that with Front Row Motorsports. We just know they did a drop the appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So, as with many things, I know I've expressed frustration with, say, the transferring of a charter for 1 year and bringing it back. We know they're playing, taking advantage of a loophole, if you will. Okay, this is one of those. What they are doing, if they appeal it for a week just to have that time, is doing nothing wrong. They have the right to appeal, and they have chosen to drop it. There's nothing wrong or illegal about that. Do I like it? No. Okay, now you gave two scenarios. First one, NASCAR giving them a week if they say, hey, we need a week to prepare. I disagree with that, and here's the reason. They did something wrong. They're penalized. It's supposed to hurt. It's supposed to put them in a jam so that they don't do it again. So making an exception of, okay, we'll give you a week to prepare for your penalty or punishment, no, I don't buy that. Now, do I agree with what you said of maybe they need to look at that and say, hey, if you file an appeal, it's going to cost you this, which I know there's some cost to the appeal process. I don't know what it is. But if you make the appeal, you're going to go through it and, you know, whatever. If you appeal it and then decline it and so forth, maybe add then, okay, well, then you're going to lose your crew chief for 5 weeks or 6 weeks instead, since you didn't follow through with the appeal itself. Like I said, right now what they're doing is not against the rules or illegal in any way. They're going around the intent, I believe, but that's not, you know, like I said, they're not doing anything wrong yet. NASCAR would have to make it so of, hey, if you appeal it and don't follow through with it, then we're going to have to assume, which it would be an assumption, that you're just trying to buy time, and we're going to make that cost on the latter end of, like I said, 5-6 races for the crew chief instead of 4. And the whole reason I say that to your aspect of give them time for that, like I said, the penalty is there for a reason. You did something wrong, it's supposed to hurt. So I don't agree with then, okay, getting a week to prepare for it.
Okay, so yeah, I have to agree with you. I prefer if NASCAR does something that eliminates them from using that loophole to buy themselves time. That leaves a bad taste in my mouth when it feels like they're doing that. Now, you're right. If they haven't done anything wrong, according to the rules as it exists today, they're allowed to do that. They can change their mind. The other possibility is that they thought they might have a reason to appeal, and as they went through the process of developing their argument, they realized that they really don't have a good argument, and so they dropped the appeal. That's giving them the benefit of the doubt. I think that these kind of things happen, though, the more we kind of get the feeling that they're just buying time. So I wish they would say more than they just dropped the appeal, too, because we don't really know why they dropped the appeal or if they had an argument or anything else. I agree with you. I think that NASCAR needs to look at this and really tighten that up so that people don't take advantage of buying themselves time with faking an appeal process because it's intended to be an immediate penalty that they need to serve. And, you know, maybe you can appeal, but your driver is still going to be out of the race. So, you know, I don't know. But NASCAR, I think, does need to take a look at it and tighten up the process.
Yeah, and you're right. I want to say that with Front Row Motorsports, like you said, maybe they did come across something and found that they did make a mistake or, you know, didn't feel they had enough to truly make the argument. We don't know that. Like I said, that was initially my thought on their end. On this one, that they weren't buying time because they refused to talk about it anymore. I felt like they were saying, hey, we got a case and we're going to make it. Now with this dropping of it, I lean back the other way. And that is purely our thoughts, being that there was nothing specific said about it. We don't know either way prior to or now that they've dropped it what their true intent was. So, we can't just make that assumption. The only thing I see that NASCAR could do, and I don't know because of the way things are in the process, I believe it's by Tuesday morning or what it, trying to think when the penalty comes out Tuesday. I think they have until Tuesday at noon to identify whether they're going to appeal it or not, would be to have the appeal heard prior to that next race. And so you got 3 days or whatever it be, if it's a Friday, Saturday race, depending on the series, that you have until then to prepare, hear the appeal by then and make that determination. And from there, again, it still goes back to if you appeal at a second level. But to that effect, like I said, essentially improve that prior, not improve, expedite that process so that one way or another it is settled prior to that next weekend. But on the other hand, I also don't want to put it in a position then where it's too much of a rush decision where they don't make the best decision. So there's a drawback to trying to do that as well.
Yeah, I think there's a real fine line there. But, you know, it does leave kind of a bad taste in your mouth when you feel like a team has taken advantage of the situation to buy themselves time to serve their penalty. And I think that's what, you know, I'm just going to say me personally and maybe some other fans kind of don't like when they see that happening. So if NASCAR can tighten that up and make it a little bit less likely for that to happen, I think that would be a positive. I think they should serve their penalty immediately and not have this buying of time situation.
And I am with you on that, Sharon. I do agree with that. And that's why I said when you said they could go to NASCAR and ask for a week before they serve it, I'm like, no, I don't buy that one because that's the whole point of a penalty.
Of a pansy. To me, that was a pansy option, but I don't like that option. I just think that they need to tighten it up.
But that was, like I said, going through the news of all that I saw for tonight.
Yeah, that's all I've got, too. I kind of went through several things on social media and looking around the different news organizations to see if I could find any other hot topics for tonight, and I couldn't really find a lot. It wasn't a big news week this week, I guess, but we'll be back here next Monday for the review of the racing at Michigan, but where are you going to be over the weekend, Jay?
Staying at home, but not on Saturday night, as the baddest bullring in the South, Columbus Speedway, going to be part of a tri-race modified tour. We got the final event in the championship here at Columbus Speedway, which is about 5 minutes from the house. And I know I mentioned this, I think, on Monday. I was still in Kent, but I get to hear Dave Moody on a regular basis as I have my Durango back after the deer incident, so... I'm a pretty happy camper here as of late. You can follow me.
Let me ask you something real quick. I did not get to hear the Sawyer Elton interview. Did you hear it?
I did not. That was in the morning. I heard a couple of I'm normally in the vehicle in the afternoon, so I heard a couple of the clips from it from the morning. Moody's show is from 2 to 6. Central, whatever that is, Eastern, 1 to 5 Eastern, I think. Referenced it. So, yeah, I did not hear the full interview because that was during the morning drive with Pete Pistone and Mike Bagley.
Oh, okay. I was curious to see what he had to say. Unfortunately, I was busy during that time and did not get to hear that interview, and I really wanted to hear it too. And I haven't seen any transcripts of it, have you?
No, I had not. Like I said, and actually, because I think it was, that's what I think it was Tuesday morning that he was going to be on. I got the vehicle back Tuesday afternoon, and that was the first, like I said, that it got referenced to it. But no, I have not seen any full transcripts or any news articles coming out about it either.
Yeah, which I think is kind of interesting. But anyway, go ahead. You were starting to give your social media handles.
You know, now that I think about it, and I'd have to go back and look, and maybe we can talk about it on Monday. Somewhere there was an article I glanced at that did say NASCAR was going to look at making the calls quicker. When it came to the Indianapolis, the Cup Series Indianapolis race of getting Chastain out of the way, basically, if he was going to be DQ'd, there was an article on that of they were going to try to improve the quickness of their, again, got to be careful of not to rush a decision so that the right decision that gets made, but also getting the decision made so that that car, if it's penalized, gets out of the way and doesn't become a factor in the race, that they were trying, looking at ways to make that call more expeditiously so that if there's a penalty, that car who's ever being penalized, in this case it was Ross Chastain, isn't a factor in the outcome of the race when they shouldn't be up there racing.
Okay, I'm going to kind of retweet this. This was NASCAR and NBC that put that up, and I'm going to retweet it on my timeline in case anybody wants to go back and take a look at that article. But, yeah, I think that's good because that was something that I took into consideration, is that it probably does take some time to kind of rewind the tape and look at it and decide if there really was a penalty that took place. But yeah, they need. It's good to hear that they're going to try to see if they can expedite that process.
And that's where I say, you know, thinking about it, just again being in the industry, of you don't want to rush and make the wrong decision. However, in this particular case, especially at Indianapolis Road Course, the last 2 years we've had, one's happened in those last couple of laps where a car that was going to be penalized anyway was in there racing to the finish and then became, this year not as much, but still could have been, a factor in the final outcome of a race when they shouldn't have been out there. So that's a tough one. Like I said, I don't want to see them rush and make a bad call, but I also don't want to see them wait to where, had the call been made, it could have been different, which more so as I look at it, definitely a factor last year because Chase Briscoe would have had the opportunity to pull off. This year, I don't know that Chastain would have even had the opportunity to get out of the way in that short time from where they made the call because that was on the final lap.
Yes. And then they also talked about Elton Sawyer and Scott Miller explaining that there was collateral damage of others, but purposely turning right into Karam once they knew there wasn't a mechanical issue was what the punishment was based on. And they also felt that Hosfar and Nemechek did the same thing. You recall the situation with Sage Karam, and I think it was Noah Gregson.
Noah Gregson, yep.
Yeah. So they talked a little bit about that as well in that interview. I would go back to Pete Pistone's or the Mike Bagley Twitter feeds and see if you can see if they've got the interview. I'm looking and I'm not finding it, but I'm finding nips of it, or not snips,
right.
Snippets of it. But I haven't found the actual interview where you can hear exactly what they're saying. Maybe this is it.
Well, and
yeah.
I've never used it. I know with that I got the SiriusXM app because there too, I believe. But you would have to know when and where it was to go back and get it on demand of.
Well, I just found it, so I'm going to go ahead and retweet that as well on my timeline.
Okay, cool.
So that people can hear the interview from Elton Sawyer. I just put it on my timeline. So they explained the decision-making process of penalizing Ross Chastain and the final OT restart at IMS on Sunday. I guess drivers knew that you can't cut a significant amount of the course off and gain an advantage. And they kind of go more in depth, I guess, in that interview. So I suggest that you listen to that.
And I did retweet it as well. And with that, you can follow me on MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram, and then Michael Huseman on Facebook. And then Sharon will give you her information there as well.
Yes, I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter, and then also Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including our website, fanforracing.com, where we have our radio player for Fan for Racing radio, and you can listen to our live broadcast there, as well as the podcast when we finish up the show and make that available. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate you, whether you're tuning in to hear us on the live broadcast or our podcast. We appreciate that you take time to hear what we have to say about one of our favorite sports, that's NASCAR. And we have a lot of fun doing the show. We hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoy doing it. Also, to our Fan for Racing crew, which is tonight, is you and me, Jay. I appreciate all that you do, and I know you do a lot for us on the radio show as well as for our fantasy game that we play every year, and we appreciate all the time and effort that it takes for you to handle that for us. As I mentioned earlier, Sal and I will be back on air next Monday night for to review the races at Michigan International Speedway. And then Jay and I will be back next Thursday night to preview the upcoming weekend of racing. We start at 8:30 both Mondays and Thursdays, and Hot Topics always starts at 10 p.m. So, again, thanks, everybody, and we'll look forward to talking to you on the other side of the weekend.
All right, enjoy the race weekend, wherever it may be.
Okay. Take care, everybody.
Good night.